are back. Another episode of Technical Knockout, the hardcore casual MMA podcast. I'm your host, Hussein. With me, back again, rising from the dead, Jordan Patrick James.
I'm here, baby.
Here we are. We're going to talk about UFC 299. We'll briefly gloss over the slop that was served to us at the Apex last week that the Saudis turned down. But UFC 299 will be the majority of this episode. All right, so before we dive into the stacked pay-per-view next weekend, let's talk about what's going on or what happened this last weekend. We didn't do a betting slip on the pod because there was a lot of baloney on the card. Jarzynia Rozenstruik looked good. He fraud-checked Shamil Gaziev, who has one fight in the UFC. Now he has two and is completely gassed down the main event. It was a slop fest. Jarzynia won by a jab. Vitor Petrino beat Tyson Pedro just by being the younger, more athletic fighter. Pedro didn't get finished. He retired after the fight. Muhammad Makhachev beat Alex Perez by literally sitting on his ass in the third round. It was a good fight for two rounds, and then Makhachev would just shoot for a takedown, get stuffed, and stay there. But Perez literally did nothing, so he lost the third round on the judges' scorecards, and Makhachev won by sitting down. Umar Nurmagomedov got dropped in his fight, but still won a 30-25, 30-26 decision. So pretty impressive performance there from him. Steve Erceg knocked out Matt Schnell. We all saw that coming. Basharat lost his first loss in the UFC to Ayman Zahabi. It was a good fight. Honestly, that was probably the best fight from the card. But, you know, Basharat just kind of let it get away from him in that third round. Second round, he was tired. Third round, he had a nice little comeback. You know, you could argue that he won that round. But Zahabi did land some pretty powerful strikes, and that's what gave him the decision in the judges' eyes. So sucks there if you're a Basharat fan, but, you know, he'll come back. It's still early. Christian Leroy Duncan knocked out Claudio Ribeiro. That was very easy to see coming. Ludovic Klein over AJ Cunningham, same deal. And then that Vinicius Oliveira versus Bernardo Sopai fight was insane. Sopai won the first round, was, you know, beating the shit out of Oliveira, and then second round comes out, Oliveira came back, and third round he got one of the craziest knockouts I've ever seen, maybe the best flying knee I've ever seen. It was insane. He ran across the cage and deaded the guy. The guy looked like he got shot. It was bad. So, you know, props to there. If you guys are gonna, if you haven't seen anything from the card, definitely check out that fight. Check out the Basharat fight. Ludovic Klein was pretty fun to see beat up. And the Usyk knockout, I think those are the ones to take away. All right, enough about that. You know, we're they done. Gave us five rounds in the heavyweights in the main event in the Apex with a guy that couldn't go more than a round. They gave us the, you know, whatever other bullshit they tried to feed us the week before. I don't even remember right now. Well, it was actually pretty good. Whatever. We're coming back big time. UFC 299, and this card is stacked, like, really stacked. Actually, this is a very good card. I'm excited for it. A lot of people are saying it's better than UFC 300. I think both cards are really stacked. This one certainly has a lot of star power on it and a lot of potential for some great fights and some questions to be answered. So I'm really excited for it. Jordan's really excited for it.
I'm pumped.
Yeah, let's fucking break this shit down, man. We're going to start from the top, make it drop. I'm not going to finish the rest of that. We're going to get caught for the copyright. But we got Sean O'Malley versus Marlon Chito Vera for the bantamweight title.
Getting it back, baby. Finally getting that rematch.
Oh, yeah. Chito won that first fight with the leg kick, hit the perineal nerve, gave Sean O'Malley the drop foot, and finished him with that elbow on the ground. Pretty crazy. It could have been a little bit of an early stoppage, depending on what you think, but either way, you know, both guys showed some good signs in that fight, and it looked like it was turning out to be a very exciting matchup. Unfortunately, it ended a lot earlier than that. Jordan, you got, like, a pick in this fight? How are you feeling about this one? Preliminary.
I mean, you know, I always love riding with Sugar Sean O'Malley. He's, you know, he's risen to the occasion time and time again. You know, I feel like that he's just, he always finds a way to win. Obviously going up against a guy that he did not find a way to win. I don't know. I'm interested to see this fight. I think that he's improved immensely since that first time they met. And I'm not sure how much Marlon Vera has improved since the last time they met. I could be wrong. Maybe Marlon Vera is going to take him out and be the new bantamweight champion, just like Marab predicted. You know, I know that he's got his own little flow chart on how he's going to get to the bantamweight title. You know, solid math there. I can't complain with him. I think Sean O'Malley gets it done. I think that, like I said, I think that he's just improved every single fight that we have seen him in. I think is incredibly well studied. I think this is going to be a successful first defense for him. At least that's what I would like to see. Like I said, I'm a big Sugar Sean fan, so I think he's going to get this done, probably by KO. I could see him putting Marlon's lights out.
Yeah, I mean, I think this fight has a few different ways it can play out. I think we're probably both in agreement it's not going to be a submission. I think this fight's either going to go to knockout or decision. Neither guys are really too occupied with the grappling realm of the fight. If anything, I think I'd give a grappling advantage to Cheeto, but he's really not a wrestler. I don't think he wants to go to the ground. I think he wants to, you know, punch Sean O'Malley in the face. This fight's very interesting to me, and the odds are extremely interesting because they have O'Malley as a pretty heavy favorite right now. I think I saw him at minus 250, so you can get Cheeto at, like, plus 200 about. I think those are great odds on Cheeto. If you've been paying attention this year, every main event has had an underdog victory so far in 2024, and I think we might see that trend continue. Sean O'Malley is a great fighter. I think he has improved more since the first fight than Cheeto has. I think that was a great point you brought up, Jordan. But I just don't know if stylistically he has what it takes to beat Cheeto. I think he can win lots of the fight. I think he's going to win minutes and minutes and minutes of the fight. Cheeto is one of those guys who, like Yoel Romero or, you know, any of these other guys, I'm blanking on a couple others now, but these dudes that are just like so, Kevin Holland's another one, we'll talk about him later. They're just so tough. They're so durable, you know? They don't get knocked out. They don't get dropped. They've never been submitted. You know what I mean? Cheeto, it's even hard to cut him. You know, his face is like made out of sandpaper or something. The dude is tough as nails, and I feel like Sean O'Malley is not. I think O'Malley is a little bit, I'm not going to say fragile, because that's crazy to say about a world championship fighter, but I think he's definitely not as durable as Cheeto is. And I don't only mean in terms of taking a punch, because O'Malley does take a good punch. I mean more so that his bones are weak compared to Cheeto's. I know it sounds crazy, but every fight he fights, he needs to take time off of because he breaks his hands. You know, he broke his hands on Moutinho's face.
That is true.
His hands on Jan. The dude has brittle hands, and in a 5-round fight against a guy with an iron head like Cheeto, I don't like that. You know, and I do think that I think if let's say that he does break his hands in the fight, I think that his kicking is really good, O'Malley, and I think he can win a lot of the fight with those kicks. But I think O'Malley's a great striker, and he's really good at switching stance to get a better angle on his opponent. And a lot of times, that's how he finds that knockout shot. You know, a lot of his favorite punch is the, you know, that cross that's straight over the top, pulling back and dropping that straight down on guys' chin when they overextend. He did it with O'Malley. He did it with Almeida. He did it with countless other guys. Over and over, he did it to Chris Moutinho. And I think Marlon Vera is going to present that strike because he does tend to kind of, you know, follow. But he follows very patiently, so I don't see him really overextending like that. And something that he did in the first fight that I think is going to be a big factor in this fight is when O'Malley switches stances to get that angle, the way to counter that is to switch stance with him. And Cheeto does that, like, religiously in that first fight. If you watch the fight, every time O'Malley switches stances, Cheeto switches stance with him to make sure he doesn't get that you know, strong side angle on him. And when he does do that, he also blasts his leg kicks. And we've seen O'Malley have a lot of trouble with good leg kicks. You know, early in his career against Andre Sukumtath, against Cheeto, you know, people can call it a fluke or whatever, but Cheeto was landing a lot of leg kicks in that fight. And, you know, let's say even if he doesn't break his leg, you know, like how he did in the first one, you know, he could still just turn down the movement of O'Malley, which is going to be his biggest tool in this fight.
Yeah. That's a great point.
Yeah. And if he gets that movement down and, you know, O'Malley starts to look more and more like a stationary target, can't do his, you know, dips and dodges as easily. I think Cheeto's going to have a lot of success as the fight draws on, fourth, fifth round. I could see him having a lot of success in those rounds. I think O'Malley can be knocked out and Cheeto can't. So that's why I feel like I think Cheeto's a great pick. Now, let me, I know it's crazy to say the guy can't get knocked out, but you see him take like huge punches from some of the hardest hitters in the division's history and doesn't get fazed by them. You know what I mean? And people are they're comparing this fight to the Corey Sandhagen fight, where Cheeto really got frozen by Sandhagen. I think a big part of that performance for Cheeto, that losing performance, was that Corey Sandhagen was able to mix in the wrestling over and over and over. And that's not something O'Malley's going to do. That's nothing. It's something he's never done in his career. I don't see him starting now against somebody who's much better with the submission game on the bottom as Marlon Vera is. I don't expect O'Malley to go for a lot of takedowns here. I think he's going to do a much more striking approach. And I think that striking approach is going to lend him a lot of success as the fight goes on. But it's not going to get the knockout. And I think Cheeto's going to be able to find that opportunity for the knockout as the fight draws on. I don't know.
Do you think Cheeto's going to be able to perform well in this big main event spot of a numbered UFC card with, you know, such a stacked card behind it?
You think like if the pressure is going to get them?
Yeah, maybe. You know, I Sean O'Malley has, you know, he's grown up, you know, part of his allure was the superstardom. He's used to a lot of eyes on him. He used a lot of these big moments that, you know, even when he, so for instance, I forget what card it was that he fought Piotr on, but that was a very, you know, maybe not, it wasn't the main event, but there was a lot of eyes on it. There was a lot of hype behind it.
Yeah, it was the people's main event.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, he just got off of this one with Aljamain Sterling where, you know, he came out and, you know, put his lights out. So he has shown time and time again that he performs, you know, very well, if not better, under these kind of circumstances. I don't think we've seen Cheeto in this position before. And we see a lot of times that guys just, you know, that probably should do well, you know, end up not measuring up in the moment, when if it was done in the Apex, they probably would have, because isn't that where they fought the last time?
On the Apex, the first fight, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's like in a vacuum, and then now you have to add in this whole other factor. I think that's a factor that a lot of people may not be considering.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I don't know if Cheeto's necessarily going to be starstruck or, you know, frozen under the big lights. But
that's a big moment.
It's a big factor. Yeah.
This would be his, if he don't beat him in, and he's got to go straight to that back of the line, you know?
Yeah. I just feel like Cheeto's the kind of guy who doesn't really care about the belt or the fame or anything like that. I think he just really likes beating the shit out of people. And I think that's something that like benefits guys like who are in those big spots. You know what I mean? That they can kind of just get into that flow state, you know? Cheeto's headlined a few times. But you know what? You bring up a great point, though, because it is not in the Apex. And O'Malley's movement is his biggest tool, like we alluded to earlier. So it's going to be like in that first fight, there was several times where Cheeto was able to walk him down to the fence. And, you know, O'Malley was forced to do the classic Adesanya. I'm not going to credit to Adesanya, but something Adesanya does a lot where you move one way and then you dip out the other when you're trapped in the corner. And there's going to be less opportunity for Cheeto to back him into a corner because they're in a bigger cage now. So that could be a big factor in the fight. And that's just going to mean that Cheeto needs to use those leg kicks more and more and more and early and early and often, you know?
Yeah. I'll tell you, I don't feel confident enough to put a bet on this one.
Yeah. I mean, I think if the odds were closer, I wouldn't bet on it. But since the odds are inflating in O'Malley's direction, I really feel like this fight can go either way. And, if you're getting Marlon Vera at plus 200, I feel like you have to take it. You know what I mean? Dog or pass in this fight.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is just one that I think we've talked about on a couple of previous pods that I feel a little bit too much emotionally invested in the fighter as well as this one. So I think it's, for me, it's best to keep my money out of this one.
I hear you. Yeah. I mean, you know, we've learned that lesson many times on this podcast, get your emotions out of the equation. That's going to come up later when we talk about Curtis Blaydes fight, at least for me. Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not going to sit here and act like Cheeto's going to run through him. It's a tough fight for both guys. Like I said, I think the fight can go either way. So I do see this fight going long. I don't know if it'll go to decision, but I definitely see it getting past like the third round. They're both pretty tough unless, you know, another freak injury happens in this fight like it did in the first one. To O'Malley's credit, he's a fast starter and Cheeto's a slow starter. So O'Malley can definitely pick up that first round if he doesn't, you know, if his leg doesn't implode again. He can definitely start to rack up those points and early and often and use that movement, use the volume and everything on a guy who is pretty stationary as Cheeto is. But, you know, Cheeto is also, he's not just standing there and staring. He's very defensively minded. I saw the breakdown that Corey Sandhagen did of this fight, and he talks about how in his fight with Cheeto, there was a lot of times where he was in the position to hit him and he would, you know, he would get very close to, but Vera has like very slick tricks in those tight spots in order to not get hit. And that's kind of why he freezes up a lot, is because he's not good at doing offense and defense together like O'Malley is. O'Malley's very good at dropping back and then hitting you with the right hand. You know what I mean? Evading and then attacking. Vera's more like dodge, block, 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 dodge, block, dodge, hit, 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 hit. You know what I mean? Let me get in the range to touch you and then I'm going to unload. Which is, it's a tough matchup for somebody like Vera when you're fighting somebody as elusive as O'Malley in the big cage. So I think O'Malley can have a lot of success in this fight. But I have that feeling that the underdog's going to get it done, and the durability is the biggest factor for me. I think the leg kicks, I think the jab of Cheeto, it's just a matter of if Cheeto's going to show up and if he's going to perform. And if he does, I think he poses a lot of problems to O'Malley. I'm excited for the fight, though. Let's keep going down the card because there's a lot of really great fights on this card. We'll go to the betting slip later and, you know, finalize those picks. So in the co-main, you got Dustin Poirier versus Benoit Saint-Denis. This is an awesome fight at lightweight. Top five implications here. Benoit Saint-Denis has been on a tear in the UFC. Hasn't fought the top level competition, but, you know, he hasn't given the opportunity to. This is his first step up.
Which, you know, before we go in, I want to say good on Poirier for finally opening up that goddamn gate in the lightweight division and taking a challenge that, you know, isn't fucking, you know, we haven't seen before. So good on him. Although I don't know how much of a choice a lot of these young, hungry guys are giving these, you know, stalwarts up at the top of the division. But good on him for taking the fight.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I mean, you know, this is very similar to like the Gaethje versus Fazia fight. Or, you know, Sarukian versus Dariush, which we saw recently. I'm happy to see the lightweight old guard finally, you know, challenging that young generation, or letting that young generation challenge them, rather. And I do think that it is a very tough fight for Poirier. I like Benoit Saint-Denis in this matchup, and the biggest reason why is his wrestling. You know, the guy is a really good wrestler. Poirier's had trouble with great wrestlers in the past. I mean, obviously against, you know, the best grapplers and wrestlers in the division's history and Charles Oliveira and Khabib Nurmagomedov. But, you know, even in fights like against Jim Miller, you know, against Dan Hooker to a certain extent, you know, Poirier has some trouble in those wrestling exchanges. His hips aren't as good as they used to be. And I think Benoit Saint-Denis is young. He's hungry. He's motivated. He's tough as nails. I think he's going to be able to walk through a lot of the shots from Poirier. And get to the hips and get some success on the ground. He might even get a finish. You know, he might get a submission in this fight.
I was seeing something that said that Dustin Poirier has never lost back-to-back fights. So this would be crazy to see him get not only lose, but get finished in back-to-back fights.
Yeah, I mean, he got knocked out pretty bad in that fight against Gaethje.
That wasn't even that long ago either.
Was it?
How long ago was that?
Let me check. It was in July 2023, so it's been like...
Okay, it's been like, a minute.
Yeah, it's been like a good like 9 months, right?
Okay,
like,
yeah.
Do the math. Yeah, like 8-9 months. Yeah, that's not bad. I mean, it's, you know, he got knocked out pretty bad in that fight, but, you know, knockouts like that at this stage in your career, it doesn't necessarily matter how much time he takes off. It could change his life, you know? Poirier hasn't been knocked out like that since... I mean, last one I remember was Michael Johnson. That was in like 2016. In those fights against Khabib and Oliveira, he more got, you know, dominated and submitted. Yeah, he hasn't lost by knockout since Johnson before that. I remember him coming back very strong from that Johnson knockout, but he was, you know, 8 years younger or however much younger he was at that time. So we'll see how it affects him. I think Poirier is big in the underdog spot here. He's, you know, obviously as war hungry and as battle tested as they come. The guy's been in some of the craziest fights in UFC history. The fight with Chandler, the fight with Gaethje, the fight with Dan Hooker. My goodness, Korean Zombie. So many classic wars. Max Holloway with Dustin Poirier in the forefront of them. So, you know, I do think as the fight goes on, it's probably going to lean towards Poirier, I'd imagine. I mean, just because of that grit and that toughness that he's always shown throughout his career. Benoit Saint-Denis is really tricky on the feet, but he's definitely more threatening as a grappler in this matchup. And I think I'm going to have to go with the youth and athleticism in this matchup here. And I'm going to go with Benoit Saint-Denis. So what do you think, Jordan? Jordan? Oh, God damn it. Not again.
Yeah, he froze.
Yeah, no, it's us.
Yeah, I think Benoit's got it done.
You got Benoit.
Yeah, I think Benoit Saint-Denis is going to get it. Yeah, I think he's going to get it done as well. I like Poirier, but you got to think that he's kind of getting toward the end of his career, and it's about time that these guys kind of, I don't like saying put him out. But it's the game, man. It's dog eat dog. The second that you're done, it's going to, I don't know. It's kind of weird to say that about such, you know, as we're talking about these stalwarts, it's kind of weird, kind of starting to phase them out as it is, you know. Yeah. But that's the game, and I do think Benoit Saint-Denis gets it done, probably by finish.
Yeah. I'm excited to see how it shakes out, you know. And big title fight implications in that fight too. I feel like winner of that could easily get a title shot.
Go ahead.
Sorry. No, you go ahead.
No, I was going to say, well, first off, we got to get these champions to defend in their own damn weight class for a change.
Yeah, true. Yeah. I mean, Islam has talked about going up, but there's, you know, he can fight Gaethje, he could fight.
I saw something where he's talking about going up. It's like you haven't even fought a lightweight yet.
Yeah, good point. He only fought Volkanovski twice. Yeah. Still huge wins, but yeah, definitely not. He hasn't cleared out the division by any means. But yeah, so going down the card, we got Michael Venom Page making his UFC debut versus Kevin Holland. And this is a very interesting matchup. Jordan, what do you think about this one?
I hate that Michael Venom Page is coming over to the UFC at age 36 instead of, you know, 5-10 years ago when we could have seen, I'm not saying that we're not seeing a good version of him, but this would have been more interesting for me to see when he was a little bit more into his prime. Yeah, exactly. Because now this doesn't answer a whole lot of questions for me. It's more of a fanfare fight, which I am excited to see this match between him and Kevin Holland. They're both very exciting and dynamic fighters. It's hard for me to pick on it, man. I'm not sure, to be completely honest. I like Kevin Holland. I do like Kevin Holland. I'm not sure. What do you got?
I mean, honestly, this is a fight I feel like can go either way because both guys are so inconsistent, for lack of a better term.
That is a perfect word.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Holland, you never know when he's going to show up. Sometimes he looks like a world beater, like against Santiago Ponzinibbio or, you know, to a certain extent. Who was that he beat up not long ago? We're like, oh, shit, yeah, Kevin Holland's still good. Michael Chiesa just kind of runs through him, you know. And sometimes he shows up and doesn't even try to win, like against Jack Della Maddalena. I mean, that fight was on short notice. This fight, he's had a little bit more time to prepare. So, you know, it's an interesting matchup. On Page's side, Page, obviously we know what he's going to do. He's going to be a very flashy striker and throw a bunch of dynamic, cool spinning shit and flying knees and et cetera, et cetera. But at the meat and potatoes of his game, he has a great straight right hand. Great timing, great angles, very long and lanky and creative on the feet. And, you know, this is another fight where I feel like it's kind of similar in a sense to O'Malley versus Vera, in the sense that Holland is one of those guys that is very hard to knock out, and he's fighting somebody who thrives on knockouts, even more amplified in this fight because O'Malley is happy to rack up volume and Page is really a sniper. He really wants to find that one shot highlight reel kill, and you're gonna bet your bottom dollar that he's gonna look for it in this fight. you know, in his UFC debut. And I think it's going to be hard to find it against the immortal Kevin Holland. The only time I've ever seen Holland get hurt was from a clash of heads against Kyle Daukaus. And that was like, you know, a freak occurrence. So I think it's going to be tough for Page to find the knockout shot. I think Holland, if he wants to win this fight, can take him down and beat him up on the ground very easily. I think he can kick his legs off. I think he can land right hands of his own. Page has not been the most durable fighter. You know, he got knocked out by Douglas Lima, and he got dropped by Mike Perry bad in the bare knuckle fight that he had over there. Obviously, he had a lot less space to work with in that arena, and Mike Perry is the fucking bare knuckle goat.
But, I mean, and to be fair with that Lima, when that was just a crazy like sequence.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I watched that. I watched that like 10 times in a row, trying to figure out how he talked. Oh my god, it was about as like accurate as you can get.
Yeah, and I mean, you gotta keep in mind too, Michael Venom Page. Look at his career. Look who he's fought. Look how he's performed against the guys when he's taken a step up in competition, against Douglas Lima, against Paul Daly, against Mike Perry, even to a certain extent. He does not perform well when he's fighting guys that are actually good competitors. Not that Kevin Holland is a world champion or even a top five guy, but he has fought a lot better competition than Michael Venom Page has, and he's beaten a lot better guys than Michael Page has ever even fought. So it's going to be a huge step up in competition for MVP, and I do feel like Holland is a tough matchup for him. And I think the UFC sometimes they want to put together these fights where they bring in a guy from another promotion and they give him a very tough matchup. And it's like, all right, buddy, like, let's see what you're made of. You know what I mean? Let's see if you guys have any credibility.
Kind of like throwing Askren against Robbie Lawler the first round.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, Justin Gaethje against Michael Johnson. Michael Johnson at the time, top five guy, like super, you know, a stud, beat a bunch of people, has great hands. And they put him against Gaethje. Obviously, that fight went Gaethje's way, but, you know, Johnson put him to the brink in that fight. Eddie Alvarez, I think he debuted against Donald Cerrone. Like, these are tough, tough debuts. Michael Chandler against, they gave him Dan Hooker. So, you know, I think this is one of those matchups. And I think Michael Venom Page can have some success in the UFC, but maybe not against this kind of level. Unless Kevin Holland just doesn't show up. I don't really see Page knocking him out. But he could win a decision.
But yeah, especially with a three-rounder. Yeah, yeah, I agree. I do think Holland probably gets it done.
Yeah.
I think it will be a very unwelcome welcome to Michael Venom Page for this, to the UFC. Yeah,
I agree.
How many fight contract?
I don't know. Maybe three or five, yeah, but... Yeah, I mean, we'll see how he does, you know. I'm excited to see him debut, though. The guy is very exciting either way. So, all right, so next we got another welterweight affair with Gilbert Burns versus Jack Della Maddalena.
This is a hard one for me to pick.
Our boy Jackie D getting that top five shot. Or, you know, if Burns isn't top five, he, you know, certainly is a top five caliber fighter.
Is he top five? Let me see.
This is a tough matchup.
Yeah, he's number four.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, I think it makes sense. I think Della Maddalena has been improving slowly and surely. Sure, he didn't put on great performances the last couple times out there against Basil Hafez and Kevin Holland, but the dude has all the makings of a bona fide contender in this division. The boxing is excellent. Grappling is serviceman-like. You know, he doesn't need to use it. Maybe went to it too often against Basil Hafez and made it a closer fight than it needed to be. But I do think that he poses a lot of problems for Gilbert Burns' style, and I think that the majority of those problems are going to start with that jab of Jack Della Maddalena. Jack Della Maddalena has a beautiful jab. He uses it in every fight. He uses it to set up his body shots, uses it to set up his overhands. And Gilbert Burns is essentially allergic to jabs, you know? He got his face jabbed off by Kamaru Usman, who's, you know, obviously not the best boxer in the world, but has pretty good one too. Got his face jabbed off by Bilal in that last fight. Yes, you could say. I mean, I know Burns got injured in that fight, but even still, the jab was a problem for him before the injury and after it. And I think Madalena has a stronger jab than either of those guys, and I think he's going to use it to great effect in this fight. And I do see him, you know, hurting Burns in certain exchanges, maybe not getting the finish, but I think he's going to do good work here. And I expect him to win a decision. I got Jack Della Maddalena by decision on Saturday.
It's so hard to pick against Gilbert Burns, though, because he's such a damn dog, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
What's the odds on this one?
They have Maddalena as a slight favorite, I think, at like minus 170. So you can get Burns at plus 140.
Yeah, I don't even see what those odds. I'll probably stay out of that one, too. You know, it's too much of a pick 'em for me on that one. Although I would like to see Jackie D continue. You know, we're big fans of him over here.
Yeah. I mean, I think
Should get it. I would say he should get it done, but it wouldn't if Gilbert shows up and, you know, he is, you know, not to quote David Goggins, but if he remembers who he is, then, you know, I think he can get it done.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like Burns to come back and, you know, show that he can stay at this level. I just feel like he's losing steps at this age. And he's getting paid well enough to not want to retire, you know, so. I like him taking this fight. It's another example like the Poirier-St. Denis fight where it's like, all right, now we're seeing the old guard, you know, open up the gate, so to speak, or try, you know, the young guys are knocking at the gate. Benoit St. Denis and Jack Della Maddalena, we've highlighted on this pod for over a year now as very, very, very top prospects in the sport. And we're going to see them get their crack at top five on Saturday, and I'm really excited for it. So I'm going to go with Jackie D. I think, you know, if you're stuck on who to pick in this fight, I do think the over is a good bet. I think both guys are very tough, and I expect this fight to go a little bit longer. You know, if you go the distance with Khamzat Chimaev, I think it's going to be tough for Della Maddalena to put you away, considering, you know, you couldn't get Basil Hafez or Holland out of there. But yeah, all right, so going down the card, we are going to bantamweight now, everybody's favorite UFC division.
I'm excited for this one.
This is a friggin' banger right here. You got Piotr Jan versus Song Yadong. Jordan, you wanna kick this one off?
Yeah, I think that as much as I did enjoy Piotr Jan in his early career, I think he has taken a huge his stock has declined a lot, and I think that this is going to be no different. I think Song Yadong hits too goddamn hard. I think we're going to see Piotr Jan get knocked out in this one.
Really?
I really do. As long as Song Yadong can keep it on the feet, I really do think that we're going to see him just put him out. I think Piotr's on a bit of a Tony Ferguson decline, if I'm going to be honest.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm worried about him, honestly. I mean, he lost some tough fights, some close fights.
This could be the one that puts him out.
It's a tough matchup for him.
Dude, fucking Yadong hits hard, man.
Yeah, man. Yadong hits hard. Jan is not necessarily a hittable guy, but he's there to be hit. He's not the most, you know, defensively, you know, slick fighter. And I think to add on to that, Song is a very quick starter. He's a very fast starter. You know, he has several first round knockouts. You know, he rushed a lot of people in his UFC career with his athleticism out the gate. And Jan is a slow starter, and it's three rounds. So, you know, every Jan fight that's three rounds, I'm worried to death for him because I know he's going to give it up that first round. And then I think if Yadong can, you know, you brought up an interesting point with the wrestling, Jordan, saying that if Song can keep it on the feet, I actually feel like he has a lot of success on the ground in this fight. I think he can use that physicality to push Jan against the cage. And obviously he's not Merab Dvalishvili, but he is a very strong wrestler and is a very, you know, physically gifted athlete. And Jan is a little bit small for bantamweight. You can't say that about Song Yadong. He's fucking huge. The dude is yoked. So, I mean, I think the youth and the physicality, you know, technique, I feel like, is probably on Jan's side. He's a very clean boxer. But Yadong is no slouch on the feet.
I think too, like just kind of we're talking with O'Malley. I think every time that we see Song Yadong, he is improving. noticeably improved. And I don't think that this will be any different. I think that we're going to see, you know, the best version of Song Yadong that we've seen so far, to be completely honest. I think he is on a mission.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to show up for any fight, it's against the former champion, right?
Yeah.
And I think Yadong is gonna show us what he's really made of on Saturday, and I do think he's gonna get the win, man. I like him in this fight. They have him. They had him at a pick'em. They had him as a slight underdog to open, but now it's sort of a pick'em.
Who was the underdog? Yudong?
Yeah, yeah. When they first made the fight, but now I think the odds are shifted to 50-50. If anything, Jan has a slight lean. But yeah, I'm excited for that fight, man. And I do think Yudong's physicality is gonna take it for him, and that fast start that he has. 5-round fight, I'd probably be picking Jan. But 3 rounds, it looks like a Song Yudong fight. And I kind of feel the same way about that Poirier fight as well. And this is another fight, you know, come to think of it, this is another fight where it's kind of like the old guard giving the young guys a shot. I mean, Yudong has fought some of those guys already. He fought Sanhagen and stuff, Simone. But, you know, Jan is a former champion, so this is an interesting fight. You know, maybe the theme of this card is that, you know.
Yeah, they need to call it like the old guard or something like that.
Yeah.
The dog's last day.
Yeah, man. We're going to see, you know. I mean, I feel like there's a lot of times that we undervalue experience in this sport, you know. I think a lot of times guys will side with the young dogs because this is a game where the young eat the old. But a lot of times you'll find that experience is the best teacher, and there's some tricks and stuff, veteran moves that you can pull out in these fights that the young dogs haven't seen yet. I think Poirier is probably the best example of that on this card. I think he might have a lot of experience that he can, you know, impart on against Benoit Saint-Denis. But Jan is another guy like that who's, you know, been in there with the top guys in the world. So who's to say that he can't, you know, take back a victory here? We'll see. All right, we're going to move over to the prelims card now. The prelim card is fucking stacked. Every one of these fights, I feel like, can main event a fight night throughout the whole card. Maybe not so much on the early prelims, but definitely on the prelims and the main card. So starting off with the heavyweight fight that we've been waiting for, Curtis Blaydes versus Jailton Almeida. They made one heavyweight fight on this card, or maybe two, rather, and this is a fucking banger of one.
Jailton Almeida gets a chance to redeem himself from that last debacle with Derek Lewis.
I honestly feel like they would have gave him a title fight or, you know, something like that if he would have had a finish in that fight with Lewis. I think they're setting him up there, and he did not deliver.
He didn't. He might have finished Derek Lewis in another way, it looked like.
Oh, my God. But, yeah, no, I mean, definitely an underwhelming performance there from Almeida, and he has a chance to make it right here against the fight that I've been waiting for him, against the division's mainstay grappler and Curtis Blaydes, the guy who's always at the top of the division, perennial contender Curtis Blaydes, whose wrestling is his biggest strong suit. I see some shade going around on the forums and the analyst side where people are saying that every time somebody tries to take down Blaydes, they get him down. I think that's bullshit. I looked at the tapes, you know, he got taken down a few times in his career, like 3 times against Cody East and Alexander Volkov, right? In the East fight, he was rocked tremendously, and then he got taken down. And even when he was rocked and he got taken down by a good wrestler in Cody East, he popped right back up to his feet. He was not able to control him on the ground, and he ended up getting the knockout in that fight. So, you know, what do you hear? What do you say? And then against Volkov, he got taken down in the 5th round when he was utterly exhausted against Volkov because he took him down like 18 times in that fight or something ridiculous. And then he was just so tired at the end of the fight, Volkov was able to get a takedown of his own. I don't see either of those outcomes happening in this fight against Jailton Almeida. Jailton Almeida is not a heavy puncher. He's not a power puncher. I don't see him rocking Blaydes on the feet. So if he goes for a takedown when they're both dry, I could see Blaydes defending it. And I think the tape shows that Blaydes is a much heavier hitter than Almeida, and he has a lot better striking. He looks a lot more comfortable on the feet, even if he's not the most comfortable guy on the feet against guys like, you know, Ngannou or Pavlovich. He looks scared, but Almeida's not one of those heavy hitters, you know? Almeida's a wrestler. As the fight goes on, I think it'll be interesting to see if Almeida can get into those grappling positions. Blaydes, if he gets on top of Almeida, I think is going to deliver some very devastating ground and pound. He loves his ground and pound. He's always shown it off. And he's the guy who, you know, pushes the wrestling usually in this division. Almeida's had some success with his wrestling for sure. He's a great grappler. He's very talented, but he's done it against guys like Shamil Abdurakhimov and Jarzinho Rosenstrike and You know what I mean? Fucking Anton Turkalj and shit like that. Guys that can't wrestle. You know what I mean? He's the first time fighting a wrestler here against Derek Lewis. Even he had trouble finding submissions. I don't see him getting a finish in this fight. If he does win, I think it's going to look like a Merab fight if he does win, where he just pushes the guy against the fence, can't get the takedown, but gets the control. But I think much more likely outcome is that Blade stuffs the takedowns and punches Almeida in the face. And for the first time, Almeida is the nail instead of the hammer, and we'll see how he reacts to that. And I like Blades in the matchup, man. I really
you think,
do.
What
do
you think he can get the? Well, you think Blades can get the knockout? You think? He can
honestly,
finish
I don't know. I think it'll probably go to decision. They're both pretty tough. But you know, I could see Blades getting a knockout if Almeida gets hit harder than he's ever been hit before, and panics a little bit, or Blades gets a position where Almeida's going for a takedown and gets stuffed. You know, and Blades kind of has him in that like. Anti-wrestling elbow spot. He likes to throw those elbows against guys when they try to wrestle on him. So, you know, he could get a knockout that way if it's just like Almeida's not advancing his position and is just taking shot after shot and the ref stops the fight. But I think it's more likely that he wins the decision here. I like Blades in this fight. I'm just going to take the money line. I don't know about the method of victory. What do you think, Jordan? How do you see this fight playing out?
I think Almeida can get it done by submission, honestly. I think he's going to have something to prove in this fight. I think he's, you know, just like we said, he kind of saw some saw his title opportunity slip through his fingers in that last one. So I think he might be going out there trying to prove it, trying to recapture that that aura that we had that he had beforehand. Because prior to that, we were talking to him like he's like the heavyweight Khabib, goes out there, takes people down, you know, puts them to sleep. Yeah, I think that's exactly what he's going for in this one. I think he can get it done against Curtis Blades. I do like Curtis Blades. I wouldn't be surprised to see Curtis Blades win, but I think we're going to see Almeida get the submission in this one, probably round three. I think once Go ahead.
No, you finish your thought.
I think once he gets him down to the ground, I think that he'll have his time with him.
Yeah, I mean, we don't see a lot of Blades on his back. We don't know what his jiu-jitsu game looks like, so to speak, because nobody can really put him there. You know, it's going to be interesting to see him get tested in that respect against Almeida. But I just feel like Blaze is so huge. He's going to be like 280 in the cage, you know, or like 270 in the cage. Almeida's probably going to be like 240. Almeida, a guy that weighs in at like 225, 230. You know, and the wrestling obviously has taken him, like he has the strength to take down guys that size because he takes down these fat boys and Shamil and Jarzinho and stuff, but Blades is a lean 270, and he's a good wrestler. So I'm really excited to see how this matchup plays out. I like Blades for the experience edge. I like him for the physicality and the technique on the wrestling side.
How does Almeida look off of his back? Have we seen him?
We haven't really seen him get taken down. I think at one point Lewis reversed him a couple times in that fight, if I'm not mistaken. And was able to kind of just stay on top. Almeida was good at neutralizing him. But obviously, Lewis is nowhere near the level of ground and pound artist that Blades is. I mean, that's not true. Lewis is a really good ground and pound fighter, but I think maybe at that point in the fight, he didn't have enough in the tank to get anything off. But yeah, I mean, so it's hard to say. You know, neither of these guys we've really seen on the ground. A lot of times when you see two wrestlers, they cancel each other out, and you end up with a striking fight. And I feel like Blades has the better striking. I think he has the cleaner boxing.
Yeah, I will say that if we see this stay on the fight for any amount of time, I think Curtis blows it wide open.
Yeah. I mean, Almeida has those entries that we've seen, you know, he does against everybody. And, you know, we talked about on the podcast, it's a great entry. The front kick to the double leg. It's an interesting one that he throws. But, you know, you got to imagine that Blades' team is ready for that, you know? Excuse me. So that's an awesome fight at heavyweight. I usually say don't bet on heavyweight fights, and this is a pick'em, so it could go either way. But I do side pretty strongly with Blades here. Next, we got Caitlin Chookagian versus Macy Barber. Caitlin got married. Her name is now Sermonera, which is very close to Marinara. So I will be calling her Caitlin Marinara from now on. She's from Jersey. She's earned it. So this is a pretty interesting fight here, honestly. I mean, honestly, this is one of those fights where whoever wants it more is going to get the decision. And I feel like Macy Barber is, generally speaking, the one that wants it more in her fights compared to Chookagian. Chookagian kind of has a tendency to let the fight slip past her. She likes to throw a lot of volume. She likes to throw kicks. She does have really good jiu-jitsu when the fight goes to the ground, but maybe doesn't have the best wrestling to employ that jiu-jitsu. And against somebody like Barber, who's so physically imposing, I think she's going to have a tough time getting the fight to the ground. I think Barber has more power on the feet, and I think the judges love her because of that. They see, you know, damage is the number one criteria, and I think they see Barber landing harder on these women than they've ever been punched before, and it, you know, has a visible effect on them, and it's won her a lot of decisions against fights she probably shouldn't have won. For example, the Miranda Maverick fight. There was another one that is escaping me right now. I think it was against Andrea Lee. Against Andrea Lee, she won a decision that she probably shouldn't have. But, you know, not to say that Barbara's not a great fighter, because I do think she is, and I think she has a brighter future than Chookagian. But this is going to be a volume versus power matchup, and who knows what the fuck the judges are going to be watching. I think depending on how this decision goes, because I do see this fight going to decision on either side, I think depending on how this decision goes, I might change my bet and for the main event, because if it seems like the judges are weighing heavy on the power in Barber's side, I think Cheeto has a great chance of winning a decision when it goes there. So I'm going to bet on this fight to go to split decision. I'm going to bet on the main event to also go to split decision. Not going to parlay them, but I think both of those are fights that are so close and tight-knit, and it's going to come down to the scoring criteria and shit like that, an opinion. And
if it comes down to, I'll say right now, not to circumvent back to the main event, if it goes down to split decision, I see it going in Sean O'Malley's way every time.
Probably. I mean,
he's more marketable.
That's true. They want their boy to win, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if the judges are valuing power, it's going to be the power versus volume thing, you know. We might see that even in the Yan versus Yan Dong fight. So, yeah, do you have any picks on this fight? Jordan?
Not really. I haven't paid attention too much to them to really have a say in the pick. I do like Macy from what I've seen, but this is probably one I'm just going to watch.
Yeah, I think that's a good bet. I think this is not a good fight to bet on, because both fighters are so inconsistent, and it really comes down to how the judges are going to be looking at the fight. So if anything, I'd say go on the over. But yeah, next we got
Rafael Deontay. I can't believe Rafael's still fighting, bro.
Yeah, man, and he's fighting at lightweight, and he's fighting Mateusz Gamrot, who's a fucking killer.
Not a good pick.
Yeah, not a great fight for him, not a great managerial decision at this stage of the career, but when have we ever seen Dos Anjos take an easy fight? You know what I mean? The guy's fought absolute killers. One of the craziest resumes in the sport. I mean, just off the top of my head, you know, Benson Henderson, Anthony Pettis, Donald Cerrone, you know, he signed
Eddie
up
Alvarez.
To fight. Yeah, Eddie Alvarez. He signed up to fight Conor McGregor multiple times. Dude's fought, you know, who's who at welterweight and lightweight. You know, he fought Colby, he fought Usman, he fought I think he fought Gilbert Burns, if I'm not mistaken.
He's fought everybody, hadn't he?
Yeah, the dude's fought everybody. Rafael Fiziev, Paul Felder, Renato Moicano, Leon Edwards, you know, fucking Neil Magny, Robbie Lawler, Ferguson, et cetera, et cetera. So many fucking legends on that resume of Dos Anjos, and so many killers. And he's fighting a very young, hungry killer in Mateusz Gamrot, a guy who has the antidote to Dos Anjos' game, and that being a strong pace and wrestling. Dos Anjos is a very physically gifted fighter, but we've seen him even lose strong pace and wrestling fights to Vicente Luque, who is not known for his wrestling or his pace. So Gamrot, who those are his two biggest strengths, he's pretty much a lightweight version of Merab. He'll get dropped and then take you down for the rest of the fight and win the decision. I think he's going to have great success against Dos Anjos. I don't see him getting a finish necessarily, because Dos Anjos is still tough as nails, but I see Gamrot winning a decision here.
Yeah, I think this is the easiest pick on the entire card for right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think he might be the biggest favorite so far that we've covered. So the odds makers agree with you. I think he's at like a minus 300 or something like that. And it makes sense. Barber also is a big favorite. But yeah, so we're both going with Gamrot here. Next, we have another bantamweight fight in Pedro Munhoz versus Kyler Phillips. This is another fight very similar to the ones that we've talked about already, where I didn't see this theme before I looked at the card, but now after talking about it, this is another fight where it's an old dog with power fighting a younger dude with volume and athleticism. Kyler Phillips being the younger dude, and the old dog being Pedro Munhoz. Munhoz is a big underdog in this fight. I don't know why. I know he's lost a step over the years, but he's always beating guys like Kyler Phillips who move forward and throw flashy shit but can't hurt anybody. Pedro Munhoz is a very patient fighter. I think he's going to use the leg kicks in this fight to great effect to slow down the movement of Phillips. And I think he's a good spot in the underdog thing. And, you know, I do think this fight will go to decision. I think it's going to be a close one. And this might be another split decision bet on this card, honestly. Maybe I'll do a little round robin with split decisions.
Oh, man, that'd be crazy.
Yeah, I mean, shit, crazier things have happened, you know. This is a tough card to bet on overall. There's a lot of very close fights. There's a lot of interesting odds that the bookies have put together. Do you have a pick in this one, Jordan?
I do not.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a tough fight to call. So I'm probably going to bet that it goes to split decision or just goes over because both guys are very tough. I like Munhoz. If the odds get to like plus 250 or more, I'll put $10 on him because I feel like, you know, he doesn't deserve that. Early prelims, Hulk. We got some pretty interesting ones.
Hulk is back.
He's back, baby.
I don't know why. I just love Ilan Kutalaba. I don't know why. He makes me laugh.
6-8-1 in the UFC, 15 fights, almost 500 at this point.
Ilan Kutalaba. But they're all exciting.
Yeah, no, you can't miss a single one of those fights. You know, whether he's going to get hit and act like he's way more hurt than he is, even to the point that the referee stops the fight, or he's going to go out and remind you that he's a fucking championship wrestler in Moldova. He just has that in his back pocket whenever he wants to use it.
But he decides not to use it. It's the most ridiculous thing.
Yeah, or he'll, you know, do what he normally does and swing as hard as he can for 80 seconds and get exhausted and get wrestled or get beat up as a fight.
Maybe that's why I like him, man. I swing as hard as I can for about 30 seconds.
I'll tell you that much, you know. I got that Ilan Kutalaba cardio. I think it comes down to whether or not you can physically overpower your opponent if you're Ilan Kutalaba. If you're fighting somebody who's big and strong like Kennedy and Zenjiku, or, you know, I think it was Dustin Jacoby, you're going to have some tough times in that fight. Felipe Lins used to be a heavyweight, but, you know, he wasn't the biggest heavyweight. That's why he's that light heavyweight now. But he's a pretty solid fighter, man. And I think he's really improved as his career has been going on. I don't know if it's going to be enough to beat Kutalaba. Lins is a tough customer. But, you know, this fight's pretty interesting. I like Lins's technique a lot. I think he's a pretty clean striker. He's a good boxer. He has good combinations, good footwork. But Kutalaba is a monster, and you don't know if that monster is going to come out or not, you know? So we'll see what happens. It's a very unpredictable fight, and I'm going to stay away from it personally, but I think
As much as I love Ilan Kutalaba, I will not ever bet on any of his fights. I will watch them with a huge smile on my face, but that's about it.
I mean, if anything, I bet that this fight doesn't go the distance because either Kutalaba is going to smoke him or he's going to get exhausted trying to smoke him and get finished in the second or third.
I can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be good, man. I'm excited. So we'll see if he can get that 7-8, that you know, elusive, illustrious 7-8 record.
UFC has proven time and time again, you do not have to be a good fighter to be in there. You just have to be a little bit exciting.
Yeah, I mean, look at Daniel Lacerda. He went 0-6 in the UFC, and he still got that second chance, you know? So, I mean, anything can happen if you're putting up exciting fights, and that's what Ilan Kutalaba is there to do. So I'm excited for that one. And next, we have a fight that I'm really excited for. We have Michelle Pereira versus Michelle Oleksiychuk, the battle of who's going to be able to call themselves Michael. Both of them are Michael, and they just don't know it yet. Michelle missing an A, Michelle missing an E, and the winner is going to be able to take the other person's vowel, and we'll see what happens. This is a really interesting matchup, though. You got Oleksiychuk, who used to be a light heavyweight, going down to middleweight, fighting Pereira, who used to be a welterweight, going up to middleweight. So even though, you know, they're both coming from weight class below and a weight class above, you're going to see a much bigger Michelle Pereira than Oleksiychuk. Oleksiychuk is a small dude, but he hits really hard. He has very fast hands, and he's pretty tricky on the ground. That left straight is a troublemaker for him. But, you know, we've seen him sweep positions. We've seen him have devastating ground and pound when he gets there against Chidian Jaquani, against Cody Brundage, the guy that we hate. Oleksiychuk had great success on the ground there. And I think that's going to be an interesting dynamic in this fight. I think Pereira is certainly the more athletic fighter. He's explosive as fuck. I mean, in every matchup, he's the more athletic fighter, the more explosive fighter. And he's definitely the bigger guy in this fight. I really don't know how it's going to go, honestly. Do you have a pick in this one?
Michelle Pereira should get it done, you know, but we say that a lot with him. And I think sometimes his athleticism and his explosiveness can actually be a detriment, because I think he kind of gets a little bit too, what's the word I'm looking for?
Crazy.
I don't know. Yeah, a little bit too crazy, a little bit trying to, like, you know, be like out athlete the guy instead of just being a sound fighter and being a technically sound fighter. You know, I think that can be, I think he's calmed down. I know he's calmed down a lot in the last couple of years. So I say he should get it done. I wouldn't be surprised to see Pereira get it done. But then again, that just depends on how serious he's taking this fight.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think, the athleticism has been a double-edged sword for, Pereira. But yeah, to your point, he has calmed down a lot recently, and he looks like a very measured fighter these days. I think he might be a little undersized at middleweight, but this is not a fight where you're going to notice that, because Oleksiychuk is on the smaller side of middleweight. He was on the smaller side of light heavyweight too. But, you know, he did fight those bigger guys before. He's used to fighting a bigger target. I don't know, man. I like Oleksiychuk for the heart and for the tenacity. But, you know, Pereira might just be able to have that explosiveness and that athleticism to hold down Oleksiychuk for long periods of the fight, or land bigger shots on the feet and make it look and be out of the way, you know. So it's a really interesting fight. I don't know what's going to happen, but it's definitely one to watch. Next, we have Robelis Despain versus Josh Parisian.
Dude, this dude doesn't even have a fucking height or a reach on his profile.
Who's that, Robelis?
Yeah, Robelis.
I'll tell you right now, he's 6'7" and 87-inch reach. The guy is fucking huge. He is a skyscraper.
Maybe they just couldn't put it on the thing.
They couldn't fit the numbers on there. He's too big. The dude is a Olympic silver medalist, I think, in Taekwondo. From a while ago, he's a bit on the older side, but you're never too old to knock out a fat heavyweight in MMA. And Robelis has four professional fights. His last three professional fights have ended in a combined 19 seconds. So the guy does not need a lot of time to get it done.
He's not paid by the hour.
Certainly not. If you watch his highlight reel, there's fights where he just, you know, the guy comes in, throws his jab, and he throws a right hook over top and absolutely sleeps him. He's going to be fighting the toughest fight he's ever fought here against Josh Parisian. Josh Parisian, obviously not a world beater by any means, but he is a tough fighter. He's a UFC-proven fighter. He's had a lot of fights in the UFC, and he hasn't been finished in a whole ton of them. But he's not anything spectacular. That being said, we've seen these guys come in the UFC before, these, you know, super touted strikers that are so strong and so powerful, and when they get taken down, they look like a fish out of water. We have not seen Despain get taken down. Parisian's not necessarily the biggest takedown artist, but he is a tough fighter, and he could potentially put Robelis to the cage and grind him out a little bit, and we'll see how he does as the fight goes on. But much more realistically, I think Robelis is such a heavy hitter, and Parisian does get hit, and I think he's going to find that chin, and he's going to knock him out early.
This might be a setup.
Yeah. I mean, they have Robelis at like minus 400, so, you know, the odds makers think he's going to get it done. I think the UFC wants him to get it done on a big stage here and be, you know, a big addition to their heavyweight roster. Parisian is exactly the kind of fighter that it makes sense to put him against somebody who is, you know, middling in the UFC, but very tough. So I like the matchmaking here, and I do think Robelis is going to get it done. I think either way, the fight is under 1.5, though. Let's say that Robelis tries to knock him out early and gets exhausted and gets taken down and gets submitted. I think that all happens under 1.5 rounds. Or he gets that knockout in the first exchange like he's used to in these last few fights, and clearly that's under 1.5 rounds as well.
How the fuck do you get 4 knockouts in 19 seconds? They're like, I'm
one of them was 4
trying...
seconds.
Well, ridiculous. Yeah, I know that, but like, it's another one had to be like at least 4 7. Seconds.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that we're at 11.
And then like 8 seconds. I think it was 3 knockouts in 19 seconds, but still, it's like the guys just, you know, obviously these dudes in the regional scene are not ready for that power. You know, the guys in the UFC might be, though. We'll see. And he has great technique because he's a, you know, silver medalist or whatever in Taekwondo. So the dude's fucking huge. He hits really hard. I'm excited to see how it shakes out. Flyweight fight here. CJ Vergara versus Asu Almabayev. I don't know this guy, but they have him as a huge favorite here. Vergara is a tough customer, though. He's probably a takedown artist, I'd imagine, if they have Vergara as such an underdog, because he doesn't do well against grapplers. I'm just going to stay away from this fight, but I do think it's an interesting spot. We'll see how it goes. If you're watching it live and you see Asu start to gas, if he can't get the finish early, maybe throw a live bet on Vergara, because he's definitely one of those guys that turns up as the fight goes on. Then we have to start out the card, Joanne Wood versus Marina Moroz. And this is a fight where I just feel like Marina Moroz is the guy that, or the fighter in this case, the woman that wants it more. Joanne Wood has looked completely shop-worn over the last few years, and I expect her to lose this fight pretty handedly against Moroz, who still has a little bit of gas in the tank, and if anything has improved lately, versus Wood, who has steadily declined. Prime versus Prime, I think it's an interesting matchup, but I just think the Prime is not there anymore for Wood. So, all right, that's the card. Let's go down the betting slip. There's a lot to go down here. Where you got, Jordan? What you got?
All right, I'm going to go with it. I'm going to say O'Malley gets it done. I'm going to say St. Denis gets it done. I think Holland's going to be an unwelcome. He's going to give Michael Venom Page an unwelcome welcome. I'm going to side with Jackie D in the Gilbert Burns fight. I think Song Yadong gets it done against Piotr Jan. I think Gamrot in the easiest pick of the entire card. And then I'm going to side with Michelle Pereira. I think he gets it done. I think that he should win that one. I'll be very upset if he does not get it. So I'll probably wrap them up in a round robin. I'll probably play around with the method of victories, but I assume most of them are going to be money line for me.
I like those picks. A lot of good picks there. Going down the card, I'm going to take Marlon Vera in the main event, money line. I don't know how he's going to get done. I just feel like it's going to happen. I'll take Benoit Saint-Denis as well. I'm going to stay away from the Holland fight. Stay away from the... I'll do Jack Del Maddalena by decision. I like that bet. I'm going to go Song Yadong money line. I'm going to go Blades money line. Gamrot by decision. And I'll take Robelis by first round knockout. And then, like I said earlier, I'm going to put together a little couple pick round robin of split decision victories. The fight to end by split decision in the O'Malley fight, in the Barber fight, and in the Munoz fight. I think all those fights are very close, and I think all those fights can go to decision, and I think it's going to depend on what kind of scoring criteria the judges are working with and what they're thinking about during the fight. So I'm excited to see how everything plays out. All right, folks. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. It's great to have you back, Jordan. It's going to be an awesome fight card, UFC 299. I'm really excited for it. And pretty soon we're going to be talking about UFC 300, man. And that card looks amazing as well. So thank you so much, everybody, for watching. Thank you for listening, those on the podcasts. And y'all have a blessed day. And let's make this money, man. All right. Take it easy.